Well, it's 3 years ago, almost exactly, that the 500,000 Rand was allocated to Piet Viljoen and Magnus Heystek by a BizNews Tribe member who said, let's settle the argument offshore versus local once and for all. Here's real money. Make it work for me. We update 3 years into the five-year challenge. Mora Manera, nice to see you here, bright and early, and both looking in exceptional health. That is good to see. I guess the portfolios, our tribe member who put up the R1 million and gave each of you R500,000 to invest, says he quoted Forrest Gump to me. He said, well, they're both in the green, but that's about all I can say. I think that's a little unfair on Piet because you've done very well, Piet. Magnus, you just in the green. However, the gap has opened up again. The last time we spoke, which was at the halfway mark of the competition, 6 months in, 6 months ago rather, Piet was sitting at 546,000, so 46,000 in front, Magnus 507,000. Today, Magnus 502,000 and Piet 639. So Piet has sprinted ahead. Thanks to no small part by the JSE rushing higher after the election. Remember, the last time we spoke was on the 2nd of May. Magnus, on the other hand, has been bumping along. So this is the third anniversary update. Let's start with the man in front, Piet. You were out of the gates like a rocket. You've had a fabulous last 6 months. 28% improvement in your slice of the portfolio. Have you done anything different?
No, we've stuck to our guns. When we entered the competition, I allocated a full 500,000 Rand to the Merchant of West Investments Value Fund, which, as you point out, got out the box quite quickly at that time. But then it went into a bit of a rest period where it didn't perform very well for like 18 months or so. There were some technical factors attached to that, but the market was a bit flat at that time. And then since about 6 months ago, around about the time of the election, from just actually before the election, South African stocks have done well again. So we've stuck to our guns. We've invested. We basically own the same set of stocks as we owned 3 years ago. It hasn't changed very much. I think we're reaping the benefits of sticking to our guns, holding undervalued assets, and getting the benefits from them unwinding that undervaluation. We've had a first inkling of what could happen in South Africa around about the election when long bond yields have come down from around 13% to 11.5%. So we had a 150 basis point decline in our discount rate. And as you know, with lower discount rates, the present value of future cash flows increase, the value of assets increase. So that's all that's happened so far, is we've had a decrease in the discount rate. We haven't seen any economic growth or a little bit of confidence, but those are still two missing factors. And if those come together with even further declines in the discount rate, I think you can see a Lollapalooza effect happening.
So a Lollapalooza being?
A confluence of events that create a big outcome. And the confluence of events I'm talking about is an increase in confidence, at least some economic growth, further decreases in the discount rate due to possibly the lifting of the grey listing, or the economic ratings of the country improving. All those sort of things seem to be there. There's a likelihood of these things coming together. And that will produce a Lollapalooza outcome in SA, South African, the ratings of South African businesses, the valuations of South African businesses.
And for more on Lollapalooza, go and watch Piet's address to BNC1, the BNIC, Biz News Investment Conference 1, which was in September, where he unpacked that in great detail. Magnus, your side. We've been looking internationally. We've been hearing all about the Trump bump. We've got a couple of portfolios at BizNews that we watch, and we've seen some shares have just been ridiculously surging. But the main market in America, not so much. And I guess That's reflected in your portfolio not doing much in the last 6 months.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you go back in time, when we started this competition, November to run about May 2022, PIC went up 25, but I went down 25 because of the currency and also global markets coming down. So I had a little bit of an achterskot, as they say. I had to catch up a hell of a lot. And some guys were saying, it's never going to happen. I'm not technically, it's not possible. I had a great run because Japan was doing very well until about the middle of this year. And we almost were head on head about six, seven months ago. And then as markets tend to go, we had the strengthening of the rand again and the local market doing extremely well. And the fact that Japan went a little bit soft and I had very little exposure. Well, I had about 10% exposure to technology stuff via the Anthony Ginsberg's fund. So the last 6 months, last year, on a global scheme, if you were not overweight in the U.S. market, and in particular the Magnificent Seven, you will have underperformed. But those stocks come with a bit of volatility and unpredictability. I mean, we've seen it in Tesla. I mean, Tesla was like 300, then 150, and then it's 350 again. And that volatility, not a lot of people can live with it. I haven't changed the portfolio. I've learned one thing. I panicked a little bit when the market was down 30-40%, and I moved to cash, which was the wrong thing to do. Because, you know, by the time you come back from your next round of golf, the market's jumped 5%, 10%. And, I mean, that's where Pete got a great advantage. He stuck to his guns. I thought I'll try and time the market. But you must remember, when you time the market, you've got to be right twice. Going out and coming back. And that was an amateur mistake. And it just shows, you know, I'm preaching to the people not to make amateur mistakes. And I go and do it myself. It's like Rory McIlroy three-putting on the last hole of the U.S. Masters. These things happen in life. Be that as it may, right now my portfolio is between the Ranmore fund that is doing exceptionally well. I should have just put everything and given it to Sean Pesch. Say, Sean, you run it. End of story. And he's a brilliant fund manager, and he's also running some of your funds now, Pete, if I'm not correct.
Global Value Fund is feeding into his fund, yes.
That's also doing extremely well. And Japan is gone a bit soft. So I'm not changing. I'm not going to try and do it again. Let's run this portfolio. It's a great lesson in humility, great lesson in how markets work, and the benefit, the upsides, the downsides. And a lot of people are following this, and it's been very interesting and educational. So, yeah, Pete's still ahead. I'm not moving. You know, it depends. So many things. I agree mostly with Pete about what's happening in South Africa. However, one has to underline the risk lies with the government of national unity. And the editor of Business Day, Alexander Parker, wrote a piece about 2 weeks ago. He said it's all fantastic and it all seems to be working, but if the GNU breaks up, all hell will come to play in the financial market. So we must not underestimate the risks inherent in the South African financial stroke political environment, where a political event can derail a lot of the good news that is building up in the economy. And there is undoubtedly S&P 500 on Friday signaled a potential re-rating. That will be a definite plus fund for SA funds and bonds. So yes, there are a lot of good things happening, but one must not totally ignore the risk and forget that the risk lies with the politicians.
Let's examine that a little bit. I recall many times Warren Buffett saying, just buy the companies, the underlying companies, and don't try and call the big moves. Trying to call a big move like will the government of national unity continue or not is outside of certainly my circle of competence. Does that play much part in the way that you look at your portfolio?
No, remember when we started this competition 3 years ago, we had no idea that there ever even would be a government of national unity. I mean, these are unforecastable events. You can't forecast these things. If you try and forecast them, you, as Mark has quite rightly points out, you got to be right twice in a row to benefit from these sort of things. That's super hard. So no, that doesn't play a role. I think all one can do and should do is recognize the cards that are dealt in front of you and play that hand. That's all you need to do. And right now, the cards that are dealt to South Africa look favorable. It looks like we have at least three of a kind, maybe even a full house here. Something else might have a flush or whatever, you know, that could be, you could still lose with this hand, which says that don't put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, even though the prospects of Africa right now are, or African stocks are the most promising they've been in a very long time, and you could have a Lollapalooza outcome from investing in them, there is no guarantee of that happening. As Mahas points out, there is significant political risk. Like most emerging markets, politics dominates the market. And if things were to fall apart at the GNU level, it would have a negative knock-on effect into the market. So yes, you can see that there are a positive, South Africa has been dealt a positive hand of cards. It might play out very well, but there's no guarantee of that happening. And therefore, again, one needs to diversify into other assets, offshore assets, and everything else. It's not a one-horse race. You don't put all your money on one horse. All I would say to that is whatever, and I think I've been saying this consistently for the past 3 years, whatever your baseline allocation to South Africa is, if that's naught, now you probably want 5 or 10%. If it's 30%, you probably want 40 or 50%. All you need to do now is have more than you otherwise would have had to exposure to South Africa.
You know what I find very interesting, and it's both your portfolio and Sean Pesha's portfolio that Magnus is a big fan of, is that you guys have identified individual stocks. So when you look at your Merchant West Value Fund, it's not the old normals that you'd find at Allan Gray or Coronation. These are stocks like Lewis, Sabvest, Argent, Clientele Life. These are companies that would be off the radar of many investors. And yet we see Pitt owns them, so go and do some research into them. And my goodness, those sticks, as you call them in your bundles, have really performed incredibly well. So I guess, Magnus, the same from your perspective. When you look at Sean Pesh, he's doing something similar to Pitt, but on a global scale. Is that the thing that gets you excited, or do you still get influenced by these big issues like Government of National Unity, Trump in America, and so on?
You know, to answer your question, coming from the advisory side, you have to look at all these things because you're dealing with a variety of individuals, and they all have different objectives and time horizons and risk tolerances. And, you know, the advice I give to Johnny is not the same advice I'm going to give to Susan next door. They have different people, different risk profiles. And, you know, investment advice is almost more of a psychology than it is a science. And you cannot, but to break it down to answer your question, we try and find fund managers that complement each other. And Sean is a good example. Pete is an example. If you compare Allan Gray with Pete's fund, they're two totally different funds. But, you know, Pete is doing exceedingly well. He can play in the space where the big giants cannot play. They need big market cap stocks because of the size of their funds. That creates space, and that has created a lot of space in the South African market over the last couple of years, where smaller funds can buy stocks that the big guys cannot buy or don't even research. And that would be the key to people like Pete and Cy Jacobs and maybe the guys from the United One Value Fund. So on a global scale, we're looking for exactly the same. And that's where Sean is so good. If you look at his portfolio and compare it to the index, totally different. But the results have been so astoundingly good. And it's down to the stock picking skills or the company analysis that Sean and his team is doing. So we try to blend different styles of investing to try and get the best possible outcome. If you back everything on one style or one approach or one macro theme, you're bound to get it wrong. You're bound to get it wrong. And if you get it right, you must know it's more luck than analytical skill. So we try and brand it. And then that's when you get the best outcomes.
Well, it's relevant because the investor, the guy who allocated the million rand, he asked in his email, and by the way, he's clearly doing well in his life because he's in the Amazon at the moment, the real Amazon, not Jeff Bezos's Amazon. He asked, shouldn't retail investors then just put their money into index funds? Because he said, you know, Magnus, if I'd taken my money and put it into the S&P 500, I'd way have outperformed you. Of course, you've explained that you were underweight the US and overweight Japan, and it worked well for a while, but not indefinitely. So that was his question. Shouldn't he just be putting his money into index funds, Aussie 40, which has done almost as well as PIT, S&P 500, which has done better than Magnus?
Well, to answer that question, which index fund? Is it SA? Is it overseas? Is it emerging markets? Is it technology? That's where people don't have, they say, okay, let's pick the S&P 500, which has done very well. But as I said, 3 years ago, exactly, the S&P 500 went down over a 6 month period by about, off the top of my head, was about 35%, because you had the Rand plus the markets coming down. Now, that's where most amateur investors like me will bail out and take my money and run and say, no, I'm going to put it in the cash. That's why you cannot entirely, that argument is not applicable, because it does not recognize human nature when markets go down. People do funny things when markets go down. They don't do it when the markets are going up. So when the markets go down, and that's well known, Warren Buffett talks about it, and so many top fund managers say, it's when the markets go down that you need a stuffed stomach and someone to guide you. So yes, in hindsight, yeah, just pick one or two index funds, but I'm saying, which ones? You could have picked China 3 to 4 years ago. You're down 60%. You could have picked Europe. Not much growth there. So you also have to follow markets on a much broader scale than that.
Good point, Pete.
Yeah, look, I do think, I'll focus on South Africa, and then I'll touch on global. So in the South African environment, there are quite a few large fund managers who have no choice but to buy the top 15 or 20 stocks, because they're the only ones that are big enough that they can allocate to. And in the South African environment, those guys are not doing as well as the index by and large. They're underperforming the index, especially after costs. Too few investors in Africa invest in the index. The correct strategy in South Africa, if you want equity exposure, is have index exposure and then some, as Magnus points out, some different exposure, something like, if I can promote my fund, the Merchant of West Investments Value Fund, which is very different to the index and which, by the way, happens to outperform the index. And there are a couple of other fund managers like that as well. So you have the core index and these sort of funds around it. That, to me, is a sensible strategy. Too many of the large institutions in Africa are invested with a large fund manager where they should rather be invested with the index. I think that would be a much better, cheaper outcome for them. So that's just the African environment. In the global environment, again, I agree 100% of ours. You know, which index do you choose? The business community member who said, well, why don't just buy the S&P 500? Yes. If you look through the rear view mirror, that would have been the correct choice to make 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. But who knows whether that's the correct choice in, if you do it today, whether you look back in 5 years' time, whether that has been the correct choice. I for one, probably think it's not going to be the correct choice, but I don't know. So again, one needs to diversify your exposure and probably have some US, some European, or the MSCI World Index, which over the past 5 years has done worse than the US, but isn't that a bad outcome? But again, I think you need index exposure. South African investors underutilize indices and the underutilized niche different fund managers. I think that's where we're sitting today, and that's the sort of strategy that I would promote. Of course, I'm promoting myself, so you've got to take it where it comes from.
Okay, so let's look ahead. We are into the final 2 years now of the challenge. Is there going to be anything different from your side, Magnus, given the lessons that you've also learned?
If I do make a change, it's going to be for the right reason. It's going to be something driven in the market and or performance driven. Right now, I'm not making any changes because, you know, the Magnificent Seven / A1 stocks are having a tremendous, tremendous run. That is normally not the time to go and look for extra returns. That's again, an amateur mistake. Wanting to get into the party just as they're turning off the music, you know, and you know, I think the market to do that is too high. And this is where the index followers would look at the index and say, right, I'm putting my money into the index right at the wrong time. You have to look at valuations. And valuations are a little bit on the high side, in some cases, extremely high side. So I will not be chasing the A1s, the artificial stocks right now. There might be some undervalued plays in Europe. I'm going to have a quick look what Peter's doing on his front. But, you know, that's the decision. The advisor must not try and become a fund manager. I think that's the bottom line. I must focus on the client, the risk profile, tolerance to risk objectives, etc. And once you've chosen the fund managers, let them do their job and give them time to work their magic. And I think this is probably the biggest lesson of this challenge. Advisors should stick to what they should do, and the fund managers should stick to what they do, and you'll get a great outcome. If the two work together, it turns out normally a good thing.
Yes.
Peter, are you doing anything different?
No, exactly the same thing. The value fund still holds stocks like Lewis, Clientele Life. The stocks I've been talking about for 2-3 years, 4 years, since the first BizNews investment conference in the Drakensberg. I think Lewis was one of the stocks I spoke about then. It's still one of the top 10 holdings in the fund. We don't move the stocks around a lot, so we just own what we know and what we like and what we think is good. And given the valuations and given this macro setup, again, I think there is a chance of a Lollapalooza outcome, a confluence of events that creates a big outcome. That still lies ahead of us, or the possibility of that still lies ahead of us. So we stick to our guns, not changing anything. And we think over the next 2 years that will either play out or what. We'll see.
Well, I've got to ask you something on behalf of the BizNews community, because we had a Lollapalooza outcome with Palantir. Bought it at $8. It's now sitting at $60, and that's in less than 2 years. It came from insights that I got from meeting the CEO at the World Economic Forum. But when I did the numbers the other day, I worked on a 30% growth rate from today, okay, annualized, which is very, very difficult to achieve. But let's just say they do achieve it. If they do, I'm going to wait 21 and a half years to see the company make enough profit to pay for today's market capitalization, in other words, for today's valuation. To me, that looks like almost an impossible task, and yet the share price is going higher because it's being put into the NASDAQ 100, and it's got Peter Thiel, who's close to Donald Trump, etc. And I'd love to get your insights on this, because you're so good at separating narrative from fact, as you keep telling us time and again. Don't buy the story, buy the reality. And I try to do that with Palantir, and we have a portfolio update coming next week. And if I put my Piet van Loon hat on, what do I do?
So I think one has to, as Michael Mabuson says, take the outside view. In other words, how many stocks are there out there that have in the past grown successfully at 30% per annum for 20 years? And I think you'll find there are maybe less than the fingers of one hand. So I guess what I'm saying is the odds are against any company doing that for an extended period of time. Now, you might get lucky, and Palantir is that company. And that will probably mean it's cheap at the moment. Like Amazon was still cheap 20 years ago when it was trading at P/E of 100 or whatever. You know, it was the exception that actually grew at such a high rate for such a long time. So the way I look at the world is, the reason why you would not sell it is because of fear of missing out. I'd rather put together a portfolio that doesn't own stocks like that, where the odds are against you. We need to get lucky to make money. I'm more comfortable putting together a portfolio where, you know, if things go against you, you make a little bit of money, but if they go for you, you make a lot of money, you know, that sort of thing. And that means value stocks generally. So Palantir for me is just, it's in the too hard pile. I can't get to grips with it. And it's not a great hand. In poker, it's a weak hand. The odds are against you with that stock. And very few companies can grow at that rate for an extended period of time. And there might be the exception, but, you know, I don't work with FOMO. I work with what's in front of me.
That's why Warren Buffett learned at a very early age that you've got to play the odds. When he his very first one of his first businesses was a tip sheet at the uh, R Ben San race course in Omaha, where he realized Omaha, that you got to play the odds. You've got to play the odds. Yeah. And I think that's clear. Sorry, Magnus, I cut in there.
I would approach it from a sort of advisory perspective is allocate 90% of your fund to fund managers like Pete and play with 10%. And then you can pick, or it could be 5 or it could be 8 or 10. You allocate a portion of your overall portfolio to these speculative stocks that you can afford to write it off, or you can write it out and it becomes a Capitec or a Naspers one day, or an Amazon or an Nvidia. It all comes down to what is your tolerance to risk? How much risk can you take? And that's what I would do. I would say 10%. That's my gambling money, but that's about it.
That's very sensible. I like the point about tolerance to risk because, again, using one of Buffett's insights, you need to know that you can sleep well at night. And I guess if you've got too big an exposure to a high risk business or asset, then you are not sleeping that well at night. Guys, just to close off with, it is a 5-year journey that we're talking about now. If I understand correctly, Pete, from your perspective, you've positioned yourself to take advantage, or the portfolio to take advantage of a potential Lollapalooza. If it were not to occur, in other words, if Magnus's risk issue were to come in, that the Government of National Unity breaks up, what kind of an impact would that have on your portfolio and indeed on the track record that you've built up over these last 3 years in this competition?
So I guess one has to approach it again from a valuation point of view. If you look at the stocks we own in the fund, they are currently on P's of 6, 7, 8. In other words, equity yields of around 15%. So if the Government of National Unity were to break down and we would go into another prolonged period of economic backwardness, of decay, the companies that we own have survived this previous 5-year period of decay that we've gone through. They've been able to survive and they've been able to deal with the situation. They, up to about 6 months ago, they didn't make a lot of money, but they didn't go bankrupt. They got solid balance sheets. And they've got management teams that are battle-hardened. So from where I stand, if the Government of National Unity were to fall apart, then if you look through that, you're probably not going to lose money. You're not going to make a lot of money, but you're probably not going to lose money given the stocks that we own in the Merchant West Investments Value Fund. But if the Lollapalooza event happens, if this confluence of events comes together, then you're going to make a lot of money. And those are the odds that I like playing.
And Magnus, from your perspective, are you going to be doing, maybe if you could do some kind of projection in the next 2 years, what are you hoping for and what are you expecting?
You know, if the GNU holds, I think Pete's scenario will play out to a large extent. There are signs that things are improving, and I'm not going to say we've repeated them endlessly. So there are signs that they'll improve. If it breaks down, a fund like Pete will actually be less affected than the bigger funds. Because if there's a sell-off of South African equities by foreign fund managers, it will be the big market cap stocks and the guys will get out. That's the first place. And Peter's not in that space. So there's not going to be a hell of an overhang of selling if that happens. And secondly, I think the pain normally is felt on the currency side when there is a breakdown. The bonds and the currency stack the smack. So that's where it again won't impact Pete. It'll benefit the offshore funds, because the currency will decline from, say, 17 to 19 or 20, and that's where the benefit will kick in. So strangely enough, the position of Pete and the value funds right now is probably a very smart move, and to increase that in your living annuities and your retirement annuities, which is a very defensive nature, even if you think that the GNU is going to break up.
Magnus Haystack, Pete Viljoen, bringing us up to date in the challenge, the Million Rand Challenge at the moment. 3 years in, Pitt has a healthy lead, but who knows what tomorrow will bring. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.